Going to shake things up a little bit this morning. Giving you a fair warning now. It's not going to come till later, but I just want to prepare you that this is not going to be normal based on your experience. So I just want to let you know that ahead of time. All right. And then you're all going to be sitting on the edge of your seat like, what's going to happen? I don't know. We'll figure it out later. So if you don't know me, my name is Alex Culpepper. I'm the lead pastor at Renovation Church. And so I want to share with you a little bit from Scripture, a little bit from my own life, and we're going to explore what it looks like for us together to learn to have hospitable conversations. So in reflecting on my own life, I have thought about kind of the people who have made the biggest impact on me. Now, I mean, there are a lot of ways that I could evaluate people's relationship with me. Like, some people have loved me really well, and some people have done a lot of caring for me. But I'm thinking about the people who have made the biggest difference in helping me become who I have become today. Right? And I think that, like, beyond my immediate family, that the people who have played the most significant role in shaping me to become who I am, they're not the people necessarily that I've spent the most time with. They're not the people that I found to be the most interesting. And they're not the people that I've had the most fun with. Though, I mean, it's worth saying all of those people have been influential in my life. But the people who have done the most shaping and forming of me for the better are the people who have asked me the best questions. Right, so what are some examples of those? What are you trying to get from that thing that you think you can't get from God? Why is this making you so angry? How are you going to afford that? If you really believe that Jesus is king, why are you choosing the career path that you want? Have you asked God what his plans for your skills are? What would it look like for God to get his way in every part of your life? Is that really what that passage of Scripture says? Why are you so anxious? What is true or untrue about the thoughts behind your anxiety? Why haven't you had that conversation yet? Every single one of those questions I named to you, they are questions that have been posed to me at some point in time in my journey with Jesus. And because people were willing to ask me those questions, it informed the person who I became. It informed the steps that I took in obedience to God, because it helped me to recognize something that I wasn't recognizing before the question was asked. So nearly every significant step of growth that I've taken by the power of the Holy Spirit and by the grace of Jesus is the result of a question that was posed to me. Sometimes God is posing those questions to me when I'm in his word and I'm engaged in prayer and God's, you know, putting his finger on something. Many times God is sending somebody into my life to ask me those kinds of questions. And then the result is that they provide me a pathway that I didn't know existed before. So great questions, church, provide a pathway into discovery and growth. And we're going to work our way forward, working off this assumption this morning. We are in week two of our series called Hospitable Conversations. And this is all about exploring how do we love people well in conversation. So we're kind of considering the different agendas at play. Last week, we looked at our agenda or my agenda. How do I kind of bring my agenda into alignment with what God is doing? And we said this. We said that every conversation is a conversation with a highly honored guest. Right? The attitude that we ought to adopt in ourselves is that we are hosts wherever we are. Even if we're guests in somebody else's house, we're going to position ourselves as hosts because the earth is the Lord and everything in it. And so we are his people. We belong to him. And so we're going to, now that doesn't mean that, you know, obviously if somebody else is hosting, we're going to follow the rules for their house and all that stuff. But what that means is that, like, we see ourselves as having the unique opportunity to host people in the presence of God, because he says he's with us. right? Everywhere he goes, he sends his Holy Spirit with us. So we are hosts of God's presence. Jesus there working alongside us as we welcome people in to his presence. So every conversation is one with a person who is a highly honored guest. How can we plan and think about our conversations as like, this person is maybe perhaps the most famous person that I've ever entertained being in space with me, right? So we set out three goals. That three goals of every conversation, if we view those people as highly honored guests, is that we would seek to encourage them, that we would seek their growth, and that we would seek to build wonder in that conversation. So that was last week. This week, we are going to look at the agenda of our guests, right? And how we can talk to and engage with them. And honestly, today is all about how do we ask great questions? Like, how do we learn to ask questions in a way that is hospitable and connecting and building deep relationship with our guests? And then next week is we're going to consider the spiritual agenda, or what God is always up to in conversation. So for today, we're in Proverbs chapter 20. Proverbs chapter 20, if you are inclined to take out your Bibles. And we're going to start in verse 5. So Proverbs 20, verse 5. It starts and it says this: "The purpose in a man's heart is like deep water, but a man of understanding will draw it out." So the Proverbs, they're written to us by King Solomon as wisdom for living. Now, typically, when people read this, like if you take this verse and isolate it by itself, it can have a very kind of encouraging quality to it. Right, that a person with great understanding knows how to connect with the hearts of the people that he's talking to. Right, so it's kind of saying, hey, it's good to be the kind of person who knows how to draw out people's passions and knows how to engage with the hearts of people. And I would tell you, yeah, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. And I would say that that's potentially like one application to take from this verse, is we should learn how to be people who know how to connect and draw people out. But there's a greater meaning to this verse if we look at it in its whole context. See, this statement is the beginning of a section of proverbial thought. And the thought is, people hide things deep in their hearts. Right? Solomon is working off of what he knows about people. And he's saying, if I know people well, this is what I know about them. I know that they hide things deeply within their hearts. And sometimes it's so deep that those people who have hidden those things in their hearts, they don't even know what's going on there. And of course, that would comport with other biblical data that we have, that the heart is deceitful above all things. Like, who can know the heart? So we can't even know what's hidden there. We don't understand ourselves. Our hearts are hidden. We try to hide them to others, and unfortunately, oftentimes they are hidden to us. But occasionally, this is kind of what Solomon is saying, occasionally people have come along who are able to help us see what is in us that we were not able to see before. Right? Occasionally people like that come along. And so he's going to start kind of doing this little expansion on what does it mean to draw out what is in a person's heart. And so verse 6 goes on and says, "Many a man proclaims his own steadfast love, but a faithful man who can find?" Verse 7, "The righteous who walks in his integrity, blessed are his children after him." Here's the problem with human hearts, right? We will say that we love someone, and we will speak out of our mouths words of promise, and we will commit ourselves to doing certain things, but at the end of the day, our actions reveal something different than the words that left our mouth. And this is why Solomon asks, where are the men who keep their word? Right? Because so many people say things that they don't follow up with their action. And this is connected, and we shouldn't miss this. Solomon is connecting this to the previous statement about human hearts. Right? The implication is that rarely do people ever confront the disconnect between their words and their actions. It's rare that people ever confront those things. So they speak of love with their mouth, but they betray it with their actions. He says, but people who have integrity, whose words and actions align, he says there's going to be blessing with those people. So you need to understand what he's doing. He started by saying, a person of wisdom will help somebody discover what is going on in their heart, will draw out what is in the heart of a person. And then what does he start doing? He starts posing thoughts that help you draw out what is in your own heart. What's going on there? And then he starts kind of writing words to help you evaluate your heart. And so in a way, he's kind of asking us a question. Right? That's what he does when he poses this proverb. He essentially asks us, do your actions match your words or not? Do they match your words or not? He's causing us to evaluate and think about these things. So he goes on then in verse 8, and he says, a king who sits on the throne of judgment winnows all evil with his eyes. Winnows means he's able to discern and kind of boil down what is at the core of a situation and what's going on. He says he winnows all evil with his eyes. Who can say, I have made my heart pure? I am clean from my sin. Right, so here, Solomon, he posits another question. And what he's doing with us is he's kind of making us play this imagination game with us. He says, hey, imagine that you sat before a king who could see every thought and every intention and every action, and by looking at those things in your life, was able to discern every amount of evil that ever occurred in any of those spheres, whether it be with your thoughts or your words or your actions. Which, by the way, we all will sit before a king who winnows evil with his eyes. We will sit before the throne of judgment one day. But he's posing this question, and it's from his perspective, he's kind of asking the imagination game, right? He's playing this game, and he's kind of getting you to think, what would the eyes of that king uncover in you? He's asking, it's an invitation to be transparent. Like if this day came where you would sit before this kind of king who can see everything rightly, what would the eyes of that king see in you? Okay, great. Another question. These questions kind of make me uncomfortable, but that's okay. So it goes on in verse 8. It says verse 10. Unequal weights and unequal measures are both alike an abomination to the Lord. Verse 11, even a child makes himself known by his acts, by whether his conduct is pure and upright. So here again, Solomon, he gives another example and an act that displays what is going on in the heart. He says, if you look at the action, you can discern what's going on in the heart. Unequal weights and measures. This is like using a scale that reads 5 pounds on it, but in reality, the weight itself is actually 4 pounds. And so all of your customers see you put that weight on the scale and they think they're getting 5 pounds, but in reality, they're getting 4 pounds because you've changed what the weight or the measure says. It's fraud. That's what it is. That's what he's referring to. But this would be a common practice that business people would find ways to cut corners and kind of get around their customers and take advantage of people. And so Solomon is saying the kind of person that would do that, if that man wants to know what's going on in his heart, well, he only needs to look at his actions to understand what's going on in his heart. So then he says in verse 11, he says, even a child, you can discern what's going on in a child's heart by looking at their actions, right? By whether his conduct is pure and upright. So all he's doing, the purpose of all of this is he's saying, I'm drawing out what's in the heart. Look at your heart. Ask these questions to yourself. Engage in this process with me. And so then in verse 12, he says this, the hearing ear and the seeing eye, the Lord has made them both. Right, the heart may be hard to discern, but hear what a person says with your ears. If you listen to what they say with your ears and look at what they do with your eyes, you may often be able to see what they themselves cannot see. or what they themselves struggle to see, or what they themselves refuse to see. So kind of in conclusion, this is the end of this little section of proverbial thought. It is difficult for us to discern our own hearts, but a person who knows how to ask the right questions can get me to see things and open my eyes to things that I couldn't see before. Right? And in helping me see, can both kind of connect with me and draw me out, and then can help me take steps towards righteousness and integrity. And so, all of us need to be both people in this scenario. Right? We need to be those who allow other people to connect with us and draw us out and help us evaluate what's going on inside of our hearts. But at the same time, we need to become those who can connect with others and draw them out and help them think about what's going on in their hearts. And so this is a bit of a weird morning, but here's what we're going to do. We're going to look to get some tools in doing this first. And then as we do that, we're going to be looking at some examples from Jesus. And then we're actually going to like put it into practice a little bit this morning. So I believe that proverb, that it can help us understand so much about how Jesus structured his interactions with people, about how Jesus even taught and related to people, and how he welcomed them. If we just look at that proverb, that forms so much of his way of interacting. Because Jesus, I just want to tell you, Jesus asked a lot of questions. He asked so many questions. Right, in the four Gospels, we have record of 340 different questions that Jesus asked. And the majority of the questions, they followed Solomon's framework, what he was trying to do. He asked questions that would draw people out, that might help them see things that they couldn't see before he asked the question. And he did this because it was incredibly effective, right? It was more effective than telling people what he saw. It got their minds engaged in the process as well, and engaged their ability to evaluate and look and see. And because of that, it was more effective in creating lasting change or confronting than perhaps even simply telling somebody what you're observing. So Jesus asked questions about all realms and aspects of life. Right? He knew that he could use the experience from all realms of life to lead people into growth and into discovery. And that's kind of how we frame this, right? Questions help us lead people into growth and into discovery. So I'm going to introduce a framework called the six conversational categories. Now, these categories come to us from somebody who studies human interaction, who has read a number of different studies on kind of interpersonal relationships, but she's kind of condensed everything into like six big conversational categories. That doesn't mean there are only six categories, but it's a helpful way of looking at the ways that we engage with other people. And so Heather Holloman, her book was The Six Conversations, but these are the six conversational categories. But we're going to look at the way that Jesus engaged with people and how he kind of used these different ways of relating, these different spheres of life in order to connect with people, to draw them out, and then ultimately to help them understand themselves and God better. So Jesus asked questions that This first category asked questions that explored how his guests handled relationships. Right, so when I say guests here, I'm talking about the people who Jesus considered to be in his ministry sphere. Right, I'm not talking about people who like walked into the worship service. I'm not talking about people who came into his house. I'm talking about people who Jesus, wherever he was, he recognized himself as having responsibility over the people around him. He was a host to them. They were his guests. So Jesus asked questions that explored how his guests handled relationships. So Matthew 5, 46 and 47, this is in the Sermon on the Mount. And he does this in lots of places, but this is the example that we'll go with. He just told them to love their enemies. That's the word that he just gave to them. And he said, "For if you love those who love you, do not even the tax collectors do the same?" And if you greet only your brothers, what more are you doing than others? This is Jesus saying, hey, this is the importance of loving everyone, even your enemies. He commanded it. And so as followers, and they recognize that as followers of the Messiah, that they were going to be a unique, set apart people. And so his question is meant to reveal to them something about their relationships. He says, you love your families, but hey, like IRS agents love their families. Yeah, what's the big deal about that? Right? And his question helps them. Sorry, if you're here and you're an IRS agent, I really just made things much. If you're watching online, I apologize for that. his question helps them simultaneously evaluate their own relationships. But then he's not only calling them, think about your relationships. He's saying, now let's look at what it means to have our relationships structured and informed by the things of the kingdom and the values of the kingdom. Right, so that's how he gets them to think about their relationships. Number two, Jesus asked questions that revealed concern for his guests' physical situation. All right, so this is the first category is relational. The second category is physical. So many times in the Gospels, we find Jesus healing and eating with people. And he's also asked questions. He's asking them questions about their physical existence. I remember before he fed the 5,000 people, he asked the disciples, he's like, hey, what food do you have? You know, and so we see him at various times kind of being concerned with very physical realities, pain, hunger, scheduling, finances. And so Jesus, he also uses physical, tangible ideas to engage people's imaginations in relation to God. So Matthew 7, verses 9 and 10, a very physical way of asking a question that helps them think about bigger realities with God. He's talking to them about how they're to talk and engage with the Father, the kind of attitude that the Father has towards them, but he doesn't tell them the Father's attitude towards them. He asks them a question. Which one of you, if his son asks him for bread, will give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, we'll give him a serpent. If you then, who are evil, know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father who is in heaven give good things to those who ask him? So here he's getting them to think about what it means to feed and care for their own family, but then he kind of gets them relating to that experience through this connection, and then he brings in this perspective about the Father and the generosity of the Father towards them. He gets them engaged and connects with them through the process of asking this question, this very physical, tangible question. Number three, Jesus asked questions that invited his guests to evaluate their own emotions. Now, I know some of us don't like to talk about our feelings, and I understand that. I can relate to that. I get where that comes from. But anger is an emotion too, right? So we can talk about all the different categories of feelings that we have and engage on that level, right? So Matthew 8:26, he said to them, why are you afraid? Fear is an emotion too. Why are you afraid, O you of little faith? And then he rose and rebuked the winds and the sea, and there was a great calm. The disciples are on a boat here with Jesus. Jesus is sleeping. There's a storm, and they freak, right? They are disturbed by what's happening, that this storm is going crazy. Jesus is sleeping. What are we going to do? We're in the middle of the sea. We have no hope. Everything is kind of abandoned here. And so they wake Jesus up, and here Jesus asks a question that is meant to cause his guests there on that boat that he is the host of to look internally, right? And the purpose of that looking is not to give affirmation of the emotion that they're experiencing, but it's to evaluate whether or not that emotion is suitable to the reality of the moment, right? Because Jesus is like, hey, the reality of the moment is the Son of God is in the boat with you, right? And so he asks, why are you afraid, to get them to think, should I not be afraid? This, in any other situation, I would be afraid. But you're telling me that now maybe I shouldn't be afraid, and why would that be? Well, because then after that, Jesus stands up and rebukes the wind and the waves, and they calm down, right? And so he shows them why they didn't have to be afraid. Jesus asked questions that invited his guests to think in ways that they hadn't before. So Jesus has engaged many spheres of life so far, right? He's engaged the relational realm. He's engaged the physical realm. He's engaged our feelings and our emotions and causing us to kind of look inward and think about what's going on internally. And now he's getting us to think about the ways that we think, right? What do you think about certain things? He invited his guests to think in ways that they hadn't before. So Matthew, one of the most significant passages of Jesus is kind of drawing out his disciples and connecting with them and getting them to see things. Matthew 16, 13 through 15, he asked his disciples, who do people say that the Son of Man is? Now, just substitute the word think for the word say, right? Because say or think, it's they verbalized what they think. They verbalized their opinion, right? They've made an evaluation of Jesus based on their own level of understanding, and then they've spoken that out loud. So who do people say that the Son of Man is? And they said, you know, some say John the Baptist. Others, we've heard them say Elijah. Others, Jeremiah or one of the prophets. And Jesus said to them, but who do you say that I am? Right, so this category, and then one of the later categories that we'll look at, this is incredibly empowering to your guests. Right, because it acknowledges that there is an entire world and thought life going on inside of a person that is kind of separate from things as they are happening here in what we can see and experience, right? It acknowledges that a person kind of looks at and does more than simply observe things, right? But that every single person is observing the things that happen and then making meaning out of the things that happen, right? That you're looking and you're evaluating and you're thinking on a different level, and this person is thinking on a different level. And so Jesus here, when he says, who do you say that I am? He's kind of giving them credit and assuming that they have taken time to interpret and to process and to consider the things that they have seen Jesus do. And so by even just simply asking the question, Jesus affirms that the things that they have been thinking and considering are important, and they're worth stating. And this is where Peter makes his affirmation. Well, you are, gosh, you're the Christ, the Son of the living God. Jesus, fifth category, Jesus asked questions that exposed his guests to spiritual reality. So now we're in the realm of the spiritual, thinking about spiritual things. Now, of course, any of these categories could lead into spiritual conversation, but then there are questions that are intentionally on their face, getting people to think about the spiritual. Verse 26 of Matthew chapter 16. For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his soul? Or what shall a man give in return for his soul? So here Jesus, he's explaining to those gathered around him, what is the cost of following him? He had just told them, hey, if you want to follow me, anybody, in fact, who wants to follow me, you must take up your cross daily and follow me. Right? You must be willing to kind of die to yourself and do the things that I do, live the kind of life that I would live. And so he says that this is kind of what is discipleship. What does it mean to follow me? But then he asks them a question, because somebody might think, well, I don't want to do that. That doesn't sound enjoyable, to pick up a cross and follow. And so he asks this question to think about the spiritual implications of the cost. Right? Like, I may not want to do that, but he says, well, if you lose your soul in the process of maintaining your comfort, what good is that? Right? Why wouldn't you want to hold on to your soul? Right? I'd let comfort go if it means that I get to hold on to my soul.
But and so he asks the question, and he's indicating it's kind of a high cost to follow, but this is the pathway of knowing the Father, and this is the pathway of walking in the Spirit, and this is the pathway of receiving God's promises. And so his question, what it does, is it kind of lifts our head above the comfort that we seek to maintain to what actually might be beyond that comfort. Are we content to spend our life now and eternity from here on out disconnected from the one who created us and knows us best? That's what that question is. Think about the spiritual implications of the life that you're living and the road that you're walking on. But he does it by asking them a question. And then finally, Jesus asked questions that invited guests to consider their desires. Verse 32 of Matthew 20, and stopping, Jesus called them and said, "What do you want me to do for you?" See, this is another category of question that empowers. It recognizes that human beings have the capacity to make choices, right? That you just don't have to take things as they come, that each person has the ability to choose the pathway that they will take and want certain things more than they want other things. And the invitation to consider our desires kind of helps us to engage and think about even what is behind the choices that we make. And so here in this verse, two blind men prior to the verse had been calling out for Jesus. They said, "Jesus, Son of David, have mercy on us." And in this very simple interaction, Jesus does not go up to them assuming that he knows what they want. He asks them. He puts the kind of onus on them to say, "Well, what is it that you want from me?" And so he puts the ability to choose and make the decision in their hands, and their answer, the answer that they give to him, they lead to his healing of them. They were able to see. Okay, so those are six conversational categories. They're intended to give us a variety of pathways to connecting with the highly honored guests who are in our personal ministry spheres. And so the people who are able to connect best with others are the people who are the best listeners. And the best listeners ask the best questions. Right, so in establishing that connection with others, we have the opportunity to kind of help them get a better grasp of who God is and the things that he's up to. And so our main point, church, this morning is to learn to draw people out and ask better questions. Okay, so what? So what? Number one, I would say let us favor questions that go under the surface. So what do I mean by that? Well, so just imagine with me for a second. We're going to kind of role play a little bit of a conversation here. So imagine you ask a person, "Oh, what do you do for work?" And they tell you, "I'm a data analyst," right? Or, you know, it could be anything, but let's just go with data analyst for a second. So they tell you that. After they tell you what they do, you now have several choices. Like you have a bunch of different forks that you could take in terms of where that conversation goes. So like one choice that you have is when they say, "Oh, I do data analysis." That sounds boring, right? Right? Like this is not what you say. This is the evaluation that you make, right? You're like, that's not interesting at all. And so one choice that you could make is you could say, "Oh, that's cool." Right? And then you could kill the conversation at that point, right? So that's one choice. Don't go that way. Another choice that you could make, you could ask a question that says, "Did you go to school for that?" And I want you to understand what that question does. That question stays on the surface, right? It's what I like to call a wide question. It is not a deep question, right? Because what it's doing is it's like the accumulation of facts and information about the person. But when we're interacting with people, we want to get beyond the accumulation of facts and get really quickly to like, what are the values and the thinking and the thought processes and what is the story of this person that has brought them to where they are? And so we want to get beyond the accumulation of facts and data, and we want to go under the surface. So that, "Did you go to school for that?" would be like kind of another on the surface thing. I will let you know, sometimes We might stay on the surface and ask surface level questions because as we ask more questions, it may reveal to us better opportunities to take the conversation deeper, right? So I might ask the question, well, how long have you been doing that? Oh, I've been doing it for the last 15 years. Oh, well, 15 years is a significant amount of time to do anything, right? So then I might gain a better opportunity to go deeper with the 15 years answer than I would with the data analysis answer. But just recognize that we don't want to stay on the surface. We want to find the opportunity to go deeper. So the third pathway that I could take is, instead of trying to accumulate more information and more facts, I could ask a question like, how'd you end up in that field? Right? How'd you end up in that field takes me past the surface, and it kind of digs a layer under the surface to give me a bit of this person's story in terms of the progression of their life. Another question that I might ask is like, what do you enjoy about data analysis? That takes me another layer deeper so that I get to understand the values that the person has and why they even have stuck with this thing potentially for 15 years. So the first so what, the idea here is to favor questions that go under the surface. Okay, here's the thing that I was warning you about. Number two, put it into practice. So we're gonna do a little bit of an activity. You, this morning, you're going to find someone else in the room that you didn't come here with. You're going to find, you guys got to find somebody else. Maybe know that well, or you haven't had much of a chance to talk to. So find somebody else in the room. You're gonna play the role of host and play the role of guest. We're not role playing here, so like you're not becoming somebody else. You're just yourself, right? Answering the questions that are asked if you're the guest. But as the host, your job is to ask questions. You're gonna ask one or two questions, but your goal is to try to take things deeper. Now, if you got a bulletin or a handout on your way in, there's like a whole list of potential questions that you could ask that could take things to a deeper level, right? And if you're trying to figure out how do I have this conversation in a way that can engage, or you don't know what questions to come up with, maybe you would opt for that. But one person is the host. One person is the guest, so you'll have to figure out who those people are. One person is asking questions, one person is answering questions. And then after 5 minutes, you're gonna swap. So we're gonna do 5 minutes of conversation. After 5 minutes, you're gonna swap roles. And the conversation prompt, so you're basically starting out answering this question, which is, what is the most significant thing that's happened to you in the last month? Really simple, low barrier to entry. Right? So maybe you want to think about that. So this is what you're going to do. I'm going to say go, and you're going to find somebody else in the room that you didn't come here with and that maybe you haven't had much chance to have conversation with. And then you're going to figure out who's the host and who's the guest. And then you're going to play those roles, asking questions and answering questions. Do you understand what's going to happen? Are you excited about what's going to happen? That's good. Extroverts are like, yes, I am. And introverts are like, no, I'm not. All right, great. Ready, break, go. Find somebody. Keep your eyes out. If we find people who haven't connected, I'll ask you to raise your hand.